Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm net control operator for this, the Limarc technical net. For more than 44 years, people have been sitting down in front of their radios to chat, to learn from each other, to teach each other, to entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. If you wish to contact me through email, you can do that. The address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you want to contact Paul for a SpaceNet report question, have him take a look at a space or a NASA-related story, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. We offer a link page of interesting articles I've cut and pasted over a week. If you have a case of insomnia and you're curious of what I find interesting, just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring up the link page. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's busy. Lately it's been quiet. If you want to get access to it, type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and it will land you there. We also offer an audio stream on the Internet for those people who do not have radios or they're too far away. I used to only use it for the technical net. A few people asked me to keep it live the rest of the week, so it's a way of listening into the Glen Oaks repeater from anywhere as long as you have Internet access. You get there by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com. Also, I like to remind people that Mike, AC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limarc technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've either unfortunately moved out of the area or even worse, have become silent keys over the years. Their wisdom remains in those audio files, so avail yourself of them. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned. Okay, I have a little bit of AI news, not a lot, but a little, and follow up on a couple of things that we spoke about last week. And something else that maybe some people might find interesting. It's also partially a follow-up of a topic that we discussed a month or so ago. So that's what we got planned. Then we will move on to the questions, comments, and topics, and I'll ask people to hit the push to talk and put their name on a list and tell me their first name, call sign, and whether it's amateur radio related or just general science and technology related. That hopefully should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul will join us, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If my shack continues to work and the repeater continues to work, and I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times. Usually it's two. Sometimes it's five. Anyway, that's the plan. So let me drop, and I'll give you some follow-up and some AI news. Okay. Not that many new things. OpenAI has updated itself. It is now 5.1 as opposed to the 5 previously. And apparently it seems to follow instructions a little bit more aggressively. Sometimes ChatGPT has been known to wander about and to redefine its own parameters for no apparent reason. So be very, very careful what instructions you give it, because if you give it contradictory instructions in the same prompt, it's going to confuse the heck out of it. Also, this particular version has two modes, reasoning and non-reasoning. The reasoning takes longer and gives you more information. The non-reasoning runs a little bit faster. I look forward to people telling me whether they notice the difference or whether they're enjoying the difference or what have you. For every YouTube video discussing ChatGPT 5.1, unfortunately, there were about 10 or 20 that were discussing what a economic bubble is. So take it any way that you wish to. So that's my little AI news. Let me go to follow-up. We'll break for a second. Okay, last week, John, who's with us tonight, N2ZC, brought up free space impedance and the curious aspects of it. I did a little investigation, and as I sort of suspected, way the impedance and electrical impedances are not the same thing. They're related, but they measure different things, and they are different things. So, your antenna feed point doesn't have a wave impedance. It has an electrical impedance. And most of the times when hams talk about impedances, they are talking about electrical impedances. So that's my two cents on wave impedances. Also, we brought up the interesting subject, which probably a lot of people don't care, of vectors, multiplying vectors, dividing vectors. It seems there are two ways that you multiply vectors. If you want to multiply two different vectors and get another vector, it's called a cross product. If you want to multiply two vectors and get a scalar, a single value without a direction, that's the dot product. We also brought up, can you divide vectors? And the short answer is no, you can't. You can do something sort of similar, but it's not really dividing vectors. So you can't divide vectors. That's another thing that we brought up. And for my last little comment, I have a Flex Radio 6700. It's been kind of stuck at firmware 3.x for about 6 years, and all of a sudden it came out with a 4.0. So and part of 4.0 is they redid the noise reduction algorithms, which they desperately needed to do. One of them is very similar to RM Noise that we talked about, which is a artificial intelligence algorithm that runs on a server that is very reasonably good at noise reduction. So I was looking forward to that. I paid my money, I upgraded, and then I discovered that it doesn't work with my model, which is the 6700. Right now it only works for the 8000 series. So much for the money that I paid for that. So anyway, there's a couple of little bits and pieces.
KF2ZZ checking in.
That doesn't bode well. I already got thrown off of All-Star. Anyway, just to make sure, if anyone has any comments to make of the things that I said before, please hit that push to talk.
KF2ZZ checking in.
Okay, Brian, recognized. So I will take that as a no thank you for any of the subjects that I brought up. Okay. So now we go to the standard operating questions, comments, and topics. If anyone has any, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name, your call sign, and whether it's amateur radio related or just science and technology. Okay, everyone, get ready. Put your fingers on your push to talks and go.
KC2MDP, Steve, and yes, amateur related. KF2CC, Amateur related.
Okay, Steve and Brian recognized. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight? Okay, hopefully as it progresses, more people will wander by with questions or comments. Yes, Howie?
Another comment. I just want to ask you, did I hear you say you can't divide vectors? Or are you talking about something else?
No, strictly speaking, you cannot divide vectors. You can do something very, very close to dividing vectors, but every math book I've come across says you can't divide vectors.
Well, there's a workaround. Take the vector, turn it into a polar coordinates, and then you divide the polar coordinates. Because vectors is basically a rectangular coordinate. So if you have a vector and you know the x and y, you just, you know, do the hypotenuse and all of that stuff, and then you divide it.
Yeah, but you got to do other conversions. You can't just directly divide vectors in math.
Well, the first thing you got to do is you got to find r and then the angle. If the vector is xy, x squared plus y squared, take the square root of that, take the cotangent, and then you got it, and then you do your division.
Yeah, but then you've converted it into something else, which you can divide. I'm just saying that, you know, out of nothing, just using the vectors, you can't divide them. You could do something very similar by kind of manipulating them, but you can't just, in the case of multiplication, you don't have to make any of these differences. You can either do a dot product or a cross product, and you've multiplied them. With division, you have to make conversions.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm just saying that you can do that. You can go into a different form. You're not changing anything. You're just going into a different form so that it's easy to work with. When you have rectangular coordinates, like when you're doing it, you know, when you're doing impedances, you may go from rectangular coordinates to polar coordinates, so you can do your mathematics. Okay, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay, very good, Howard. Well, let's begin, and if anyone comes by later on, we'll just put them on the list. There's lots of space for them. So, Steve, what can I do you for tonight?
All righty. Okay, greetings to everyone on the net. I'll throw this question out to everyone on the net. I had recently bought the RF binder secondhand at the Hamfest, and I'm having a bear of a time trying to load the software into this thing. I finally got it to accept frequencies manually. Let's say I put in 146.850 for transmit frequency, for the sake of argument. It'll transmit on 403 point something. I know there's some sort of subscription info I have to put in there. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it. DMRID, I know I have to put that in there. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it. I'm kind of up in the air with this thing, so if anyone can point me in the right direction on how to get this thing to work, it would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, Steve, I never owned an RF binder. I saw ads for them. I think Rich KNB, K2KNB, got a loaner or something a couple of years ago. I remember hearing about that. If anyone knows anything of how to get an RF binder to work, please hit that push to talk.
Comment.
Sure.
Can you tell us what an RF binder is, KC2?
Yes, indeed. Unless I'm totally wrong, once upon a time, some guy decided to take an Android cell phone, stick in some electronics to be a transceiver, and so it's sort of a Android form factor handy talkie. with some extra software included, because it's made by the, or it's sold by the same people who make the repeater database. Steve, do I have the description reasonable?
Yeah, pretty much the whole idea behind this thing is, like you said, you download your repeater database, it's supposed to be like a worldwide repeater database. And let's say you're in Germany and you want to find a local repeater, you know, analog or DMR. It's GPS sensitive and stuff, so you just put in your, you know, basically knows where you are. You say, okay, where are my local repeaters? It'll give you the local repeater. And let's say it's a DMR repeater. You just click on it, and it'll automatically, you know, download the information for that DMR repeater. You know, no plugs or anything like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not as difficult for anyone. It's not as difficult for them to do it again because they maintain a repeater list database that's probably worldwide. I think they have a deal with the ARRL. The ARRL used to publish a repeater list, and I think they kind of merged with those guys to supply the information. My guess would be, since we live in a capitalist society, that you probably have to pay a license on an annual basis for access to that database. I mean, you think that since they generally charge a lot for that particular device, and since they already have that information, it doesn't cost them anything extra to give you at least the first year. So I'm not quite sure, but probably in the end, the advice will be to contact the manufacturer and ask them what's the deal if you need to pay for a subscription or if there's something else we're all missing. Because very few of those devices, I think, have been sold. So the chances of one of our participants out there having one, or, you know, if Rich was listening, he actually used one, so he had some experience. But there's very few people that I found that have experience that actually purchased a shiny brand new RF binder. If anyone has any comments or has any expertise in this subject, please volunteer.
Brian.
Yes, Brian.
Closest that I come is to an RF field strength beater. No, RF is different.
Totally different. It may be called an RF binder, but that's just a branding. It's, as I mentioned, it's basically an Android form factor, digital, analog, handy-talky type of thing.
Two-end. Is it for picking
yes,
up,
Paul.
Like, wireless signals? On a double.
Yeah, Brian, you're doubling with Paul. It's to pick up, it's RF. It's a transceiver, but the form factor is, rather than the standard one we're used to with handy-talkies, it looks very much like a cell phone and has many of the same features of an Android cell phone. In addition, it has a transceiver capability and some smarts to download settings for different areas. What do you want to say, Paul?
Yeah, our club, you know, LineMark has a YouTube. This one fellow did a great presentation on the RF binder. It's dated. It's about 3 years old, but I mean, that's when they first came out. So you can look at that. It's rather long. It's an hour and let me look here. An hour and 23 minutes. But it's well worth it for watching the thing. The club has a lot of good on it. So you bring up the LineMark Amateur Radio Club, and then put in YouTube, and you scan through them, you'll find the one that says RF Binder Presentation May, what is this, May 12, 2021. Back to you.
Okay, very good. I think the guy who designed it and or is the president of the company that sells it. I think he lives in Long Island. I'm not 100% sure. But anyone else with any, you know, this is a good idea. I don't exactly know, you know, what they really showed on the YouTube. Do you remember offhand, did they talk about installation and initialization of it, or did they just kind of run through the different feature sets?
Let me put it this way, a lot of both. Like I said, it's over an hour. Back you, Russ.
I'm sorry, someone is about 80-90% noise. If you could move your antenna closer to the window, if you're on a whip, or you know, run the power higher up, or in some way grab the repeater completely, because again, I can't really make out most of it. It's mostly noise, unfortunately.
Hotel, Beacon Hill, New York. I have had the K1 and the B1, and it was W2CYK in waiting
for. Okay, so you've had experience. Was there any problem setting it up initially? Did you have to get licenses or credentials or accounts or anything? Are you still out there, sir? Oh, well, I guess we lost him. So, Steve, so far my best advice is, you know, check out the YouTube, and if it doesn't give you the answer, then, you know, try it the old way. You know, pull up.
And it used to be the base for the ARL repeater book, but now they use repeaterbook.com.
Yeah, that's the company. But, you know, we were talking about the RF finder. You know, whether there's some kind of situation where you have to change a setting or you know, contact the manufacturer and get some kind of, activation code. Okay, Steve, like I said, basically I would suggest you take a look at the YouTube, and if you're a lucky guy, it'll give you the answer to your question. If not, you can always fall back to the manufacturer. I'm sure they're still in business. I haven't heard any terrible things about that company. And I wish you luck.
No, I appreciate it. I've been on the website. The problem with this thing is, like you said, it's several years old. And, it was developed by the guy who lived here out on the island. And I had found out he had moved to Cozumel, Mexico. So a trip over to his house, yeah, he wasn't waiting rivers out of the question. And the thing is that the RF finder was developed by him, but from what I understand, it's been taken over by another company, Unified Radios. And between the two, I'm trying to find really anything on the website that works. I've tried several different downloads and stuff. And as far as I got so far, as like I said, I got the thing to actually load into the device, and I can program frequencies into it. But unfortunately, the radio is not transmitting what it sees. I guess maybe I can try the ARRL. Give them a call. I know, like you said, and others said, that it used to be their official repeater book, but I think they changed. But maybe someone over there has some sort of information that will help me out. Other than that, maybe I can look this guy's call sign up and see if I can contact him directly. Well, anyway, I greatly appreciate all the information out there, and I'll say 73. I'll be listening, and if I get this thing to work, I'll surely let you guys know and let you know what I did.
Great, I appreciate it. I'm sorry to hear that. It sounds like It was a novel approach. I think it was maybe, not quite the right time for this. The price for this item was ridiculous when it first came out. So I assume that it never really took off. Again, I never met anyone before who actually owned one. I know Rich, who was kind of offered one, I think, for temporary purposes. But I wish you luck, and I look forward to you coming back and telling me good news that you were able to get it to work.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Yeah, the price of this thing is still close to $1,000. And then they have another one with updated Android now, Android 13 or something, and that's like $1,200-$1,300. I mean, I basically bought this thing for pennies on the dollar. That's the only reason I bought it. So it's not so much of a loss if I don't ever get it to work.
Okay, good luck. Again, selling premium hardware to amateur radio operators is a problematic thing. We tend to be somewhat frugal.
I don't know if you copy any better, W2CH. I believe, let me see.
Are you still out there? You dropped out of the repeater a while ago.
Alpha Echo 2.
Oh, well. Yes, Sam, you got a question for tonight, or are you just checking in?
I have two questions.
Okay, I'll put you on the list.
You're right.
Yes, I'll put you on the list, Sam. You're right after Brian. Brian, what do you got for me tonight?
KC2UM checking in Orlando, Florida.
Hello there, KC2ZUM. You got a question or a comment or a topic for tonight, or are you just checking in?
I do have a question, so sitting here. I don't know what order you're taking in the operators, but I do have one question.
Okay, very good. You're third on the list after Brian and Sam. Okay?
At the affirmative, we are standing by.
Okay, very good. So, Brian, what do you got for tonight?
Well, kind of interesting. And I think it could be spurious emissions. And that's what I want to just talk about briefly. I had a FT710 Yaesu unit where I was able to use the headphones from the external speaker. Now, when I use the headphones on the external speaker, from my new Yaesu FTDX10, I'm able to go ahead when I use the microphone and transmit. This is all on transmit only. I'm able to hear a statically amplification of my voice in the headphones. Question is, why would that be? Okay, and is there anything I could reasonably do about it?
Well, it sort of depends on what's causing what. It sounds like your RF is getting into your headphone circuit. So the quickest solution that I could think of is you take a ferrite, a toroid ferrite snap, and wrap the headphone output wire a couple times around it and do an RF choke on it. Because that's probably what's going on. I don't think it's any kind of harmonic. I think it's just a straight RF going into your headphone and your the electronics of your headphone kind of deal with it as best as they can. So I think you should RF choke the lead going out of headphone connection on your radio.
I agree. The question is, how many wraps and what kind of toroid? Pretty much a HF-based toroid, maybe four wraps around, three wraps around.
Okay, that's reasonable. Certainly an HF toroid, because you're transmitting on HF, right?
Correct.
Okay, so something reasonable for HF that will be effective. It's really ultimately what most people do is they rummage through their drawer, they find a toroid, they look at the inside diameter, figure out how many times they could loop it around without being unable to clamp it sufficiently, and see how it works. In some cases, one winding might suffice. Again, because these things are not binary ones and zeros, they're attenuation decibels, and the more you're able to loop it around the toroid, the higher the attenuation decibels become. So, yeah, two or three, you kind of eyeball the inside diameter to judge how many loops that you can comfortably put into the toroid before it'll run out of space. Two or three or four, something along those lines, should suffice and should solve your problem, I would hope.
Well, here's the million-dollar question. How do you know if it's RFI and the key cable is maybe unshielded and it's a mono cable? How do you know where the RFI is going to get to? Maybe it could come in before the toroid and get trapped, or it could come in near the top of the headphones.
Okay. Well, if you're really suspicious that it's coming through the length of wire, you could always put a second toroid at the end of the wire for the headphone itself.
I see. I'm just curious to know why it didn't happen with... The reason I'm doing it from the external speaker is because I want to use my external speaker and my headphones with a touch of a switch, which I have, and I took that all out of the loop, and it so happens. So the question is, why the FT710 was able to tolerate that perfectly, and the FTDX10 does not?
I don't know. They all have different circuits, different degrees of isolation. Some are better than others. So it might just be the fundamental design of the different stages go feeding into the audio circuit in your radio.
Okay, I will give it a try. Thank you very much. I have one other question as for the topic tonight, or was that my topic?
No, you can get another question.
All right, my other topic was for tonight. Being that these SDR and SDR/hybrids are becoming more and more sophisticated, what about using AI algorithms to do your optimization of microphone and tuning and other things? Do you think that's in the future or not too far in the future?
If there's a demand for it, I think it's more than likely. They have to kind of rethink radios and build feedback mechanisms because standard radios usually don't have feedback mechanisms. There's a feature that's very popular in Anand, the Indian software-defined radio, in which it feeds back the signal. It's called pre-distortion correction. And what it does is it takes the output of your transmitter, feeds it back in on itself, and analyzes if there's any nonlinear distortions and adjusts the settings, the parameters on some things to make it less distorted. So the Indian transceiver does that. Future models of Flex Radio will be doing that. I have not heard about other Japanese model SDRs capable of pre-distortion, but they're probably working on it. And yeah, but it just requires an extra circuitry, which will cost more money. So, you know, if and when artificial intelligent algorithms are more accepted for hams, they could possibly offer some feedback access to train the settings on SDR for a more optimal reception. So I think it's inevitable. When is anyone's question? Again, this is they're gonna charge more for that because they have to redesign it with more circuits and more inputs and outputs and such.
Okay, that's a point made. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Is that it for now?
Oh, I could throw in another one if you like.
Okay.
All right. So I have on my FDDX10 the way I've circumvented that static problem was by plugging it into the phone's jack on the front of the FDDX10, routing that to a simple like AB push button switch, and then I'm having the audio output through the phone's jack to the external speaker and to my headphones, and that works. No, I don't have any static. However, it's also not as powerful as the external speaker jack. Any suggestions in terms of if I do the external speaker? I mean, this is just conjecture. Any suggestions for some other way of doing this so I could have maybe the external speaker plugged in to the rear of the unit and have the microphone plugged in to the front of the unit, but being able to turn off and on the microphone without unplugging it all the time. So this obviously when you plug in the headphones, it's going to go ahead and divert the audio to headphones. So I need something similar to what I have right now, but more in line that will give me that on-off capability. Is there such an animal?
Okay, let me ask you a couple little questions, though. First, you say that the output is decreased. Is the output decreased on both the headphone and the speaker, or is it mostly the volume lower on the speaker?
Because it's driving an external speaker, it's an Yaesu SP8 external speaker, the higher volume is not as powerful as the external speaker, not as efficient as the headphones, even though they're at the same ohmage.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to get at is how's the volume of the headphone? Is it low as well? Has it dropped both volumes, or is it more a problem with the volume on the speaker as opposed to the headphone?
Well, since it's plugged into the headphone jack, the headphones are working perfectly. Now, when I use the little switch to divert it to the external speaker, the volume as I increase it is not as loud as it could be when attached to the external speaker jack at the back of the unit, which probably puts out some additional loss.
Well, it's not only the output power of the circuits. It's that these circuits are designed to operate into the device's impedance. And my guess is that the impedance of your headphones is relatively higher than the impedance of your speakers. So by having a circuit impedance mismatch, you're getting less of the energy transfer. So you might benefit if you kind of look up what the impedance for your headphone is, if you could get some kind of small transformer to put in the speaker enclosure that would convert that impedance to the probably 8 ohms impedance of most speakers that I've seen. You understand? I mean, if you find out that your headphone impedances is, you know, 200 or 300 ohms, you might benefit from something as simple as a little audio transformer.
Well, my headphones are 8 ohms, and the external speaker are 8 ohms. I believe, I understand your point, Roy, and it's a good point, but I also know that the output of the phones is in hundreds of milliwatts compared to about 2.5 watts out on the external speaker jack.
Okay, I just tried to offer you the simplest approach. The next approach is that you would probably need some benign little inline audio amplifier to boost the signal for the sake of the speaker inputs. You could probably pick up one on eBay. They probably have them in Amazon as well. Little circuit board. Runs on the same power as you have available for the rest of your equipment, and that might help you.
Good point. What I'm asking is that when you plug in the headphone jack, let's just deal with headphones. When you plug it into the phone jack, it'll automatically disconnect. Have a switch act is that the circuit is not closed, or is it more manual because you're putting in the plug and it actually opens the circuit?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's doing. If you've ever seen how phone plugs work, you can configure it to either connect or disconnect the circuit when you stick a plug in. So it's mechanical. You could, of course, have a bypass switch that will bypass that feature. That shouldn't be a problem. A couple pieces of wire and a simple toggle switch.
Okay, but there isn't anything else that could defeat that because of the mechanical nature of the 3.5 millimeter jack itself, the male end. Once it goes ahead and pushes in there, it's a physical change of the circuit, not electronic.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it's so simple and so easy to do that I don't think the electrical engineers have screwed around with putting it that in as part of a complex CPU-driven feature. I mean, eventually, no doubt they will. But I think still we live in a time where, you know, phone plugs just mechanically disconnect the external sound source mechanically, not electronically. But eventually they'll come for this poor little simple mechanical feature.
All right. Very, very good, Roy. I thank you as usual. My questions are finished.
Okay, very good. Sam, what do you got for us tonight?
Hey, Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf, Sam in Park Slope, Brooklyn. I'm using a 10-watt Anytone 2-meter transceiver that I picked up for about $120. What benefit would I derive if I was provided ICOM with, say, 85 watt power? What is your feelings about buying a more expensive rig for 2 meter work?
Well, I mean, it depends on your situation. If you have access to all the places you wanted to have access, or you would like to throw a few more watts into the picture. In this case, you know, you're going for eightfold improvement. That's two S units. That's decent. I mean, you still, ultimately, the nature of UHF VHF is elevation, elevation, elevation. So if you gave me the choice of eight times the power, or, you know, raising my antenna by an extra yard or two or three, I would jump at the yards, because elevation is incredibly more important. But still, you know, if you have particular repeaters that you could just barely get into, you know, that are kind of noisy, and you would like to have more of an opportunity of having a full quieting signal, then, you know, improving your output to a maximum of eightfold can help you. So, you know, it ultimately comes down to if you got the money. I think you got the money, and it might, again, it depends on the stations that you you use. If you only like local repeater stations and you're getting into them fine, then, you know, so be it. But, you know, occasionally I think you've had some problems where there's a little bit of noise on your signal. So, again, having a stronger transmitter might benefit you because of that.
Thank you. Next, I have two more questions. Next question. What's going on with 6 meters? I remember when I was a ham in the late 60s, being a novice, I mean, 2 meters and 6 meters. Is 6 meters an active band today? Where is it going with 6 meters?
Well, 6 meters, often called the magic band, has particular benefits nowadays during the sunspot maximum. This is the time that energizing the F1 and F2 layer of the ionosphere has a great effect on propagation for 6 meters. Without it during the sunspot minimum, and the F1 and F2 layer not being particularly energized, radio waves just kind of go straight out into outer space without being refracted back. So, you know, it's called the magic band. There's lots of fish stories people tell of all kinds of conversations they had during sunspot maximum. My experiences have not equaled that, although my antenna is not really cut and designed and resonant for 6 meters. You know, sometimes you can kind of force an antenna to pick up signals, and I've never heard too many signals off of 6 meters when I look at it. Other people might have completely different experiences. I find that 10 meters is incredibly active during these sunspot maximums, and I was on it just today. But 6 meters, I just every so often drop in on, and I haven't been impressed this cycle. Perhaps other people have better experiences.
Okay, thank you, Roy. Now, my third and final question, and then I'll be standing by. Iambic Morse code key. I have a Morse code, iambic key that I picked up for around $80. Kusigit key is the company. I know that there are keys out there that are several hundred dollars by the collect. I know there's a tagging key. What is your noticeable difference in the use of the key, the feel of the key, or the speed of the key, in getting a more expensive key than what I have, which I got for $80?
Yeah? Is there a question there?
Is there a difference between the $80 key and the $250 key?
Yeah, usually they're prettier. People have been so enamored to Morse code and to keys that they put together beautiful collections of photographs of unique keys, and some people kind of jokingly call it key porn. What you're paying for is a artist to kind of do art. The Italian guy makes beautiful keys. He's often at major ham conventions, and those things sell for as much as $500. The technology used tends to be a little bit different. The expensive keys tend to have magnets that take the place of less expensive keys use springs. But ultimately, with the exception of that and the materials used and the weight that some of them have, as a glorified switch, they all kind of operate. So, you know, whether you can go faster with a $500 key is more psychological, I think. But they are very, very attractive objects. So, you know, I mean, I think, you know, people buy them, they spend the money, so it's by almost definition, it's worth it for them. But you can get by on a much less expensive key. I mean, some people just don't like straight keys anymore. Some people love straight keys. Some people like side swipers, and some people like bugs. But iambic keys are probably the most popular nowadays non-entry level key. So I hope I answered your question as best I could.
No, you did very well. Okay, very happy with my $80 key, and it's basically you say if you're happy with what you got, enjoy it. Thank you, Roy. I'll be listening for the evening. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too, Sam. KC2ZUM, are you still with us there?
Yes. Good evening. This is KC2ZUM in Orlando, Florida. First of all, let me say it's nice the techno is still going after Vic's passing. It's been many, many years since I've been on this net, a little more than 10 years when I used to live in New York. Anyway, my question is, does anybody know how to key up EchoLink without using the, by using the computer, but I want to hook up a flip switch so I can have a physical mechanical a relay contact closure to put the EchoLink software into a transmit. There are times where I do use EchoLink, but using radio, where I'm signed on as an L. But I want to know if anyone knows how to do a physical contact closure on here to the pins and back, so I don't have to use the mouse or the keyboard. Back to net control. This is KC2ZUM. The name here is Alan, by the way, in Orlando, Florida.
Okay, Alan. Yeah, there is.
I lost you. Yeah. Come again, please.
Okay, let me see if I'm on. Yeah.
Either from time to time, he'll be back. Just be patient.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay. The problem is that I have to keep focus on All-Star. If I lose focus while I'm wandering through EchoLink commands, unfortunately, you can't hear me. EchoLink does have that feature in one of the settings, which I unfortunately haven't memorized, where you can change the macro that will enable the push to talk. Because I have it set for something different. You can also use foot pedals. Foot pedal software usually comes hardware comes with software that lets you code your foot press for any of the key characters. So you just have to go into Echo Link and find where the push-to-talk control setting can be modified, and then set a pedal for actuating that key. Did you hear me, Alan?
Okay, unfortunately I missed quite a bit of that. Echo Link keeps knocking me off here of this repeater. I don't know why. I sent a text message over, but I caught it. But for some reason, every couple of minutes I'm being knocked off. Did you happen to know why that's happening?
No, not exactly. I would think that it has to do probably with your internet connection, because I maintain a connection with Echo Link as well as a lot of other things here. And I haven't been kicked off. So it doesn't sound like it's a problem with the Echo Link in Long Island. It's possibly more of a problem in the ISP provider. I've talked to other people whose ISP providers get a little wonky with the port assignments for Echo Link and doesn't allow a stable connection. When they change their ISP provider, their problem totally went away. So I don't know for a fact, but I can tell you that my Echo Link connection here in Brooklyn to the Limark repeater hasn't dropped yet tonight.
Okay, thanks. I'll try coming in. Anyway, I got the gist of the information you were trying to give me there, and I'll look into that. It just makes it easy. I like using foot pedals and things like that, and boom mics, and it would be nice to be able to do that and come in with a direct connection, because I would change my microphones and whatnot. Okay, we thank you so much for listening to Vaughn for another awaiting customer, and this is KC2ZUM. Back to you.
Okay, very good. I wish you luck. I know it's possible. I don't use pedals. I have a pedal, but for whatever reason, I've never been able to feel comfortable using it. I have a Heil hand trigger that I'm using right now to engage the All-Star push-to-talk feature in a very similar way. So it's just a matter of hunting through the tabs, and eventually you'll find where it has a push-to-talk control, and it's not that difficult to change. I'm not sure if it's the kind of open-ended. I think they offer you something like two or three different keys, and whatever doesn't confuse your system, you don't want to trigger it accidentally, then you can just enable the pedal software to clone that type of keystrike. Say again?
Hey, Trim Allen. I'm sorry to interrupt you guys. I'm curious if you guys are familiar with the Radio Sport headset, communication headset, comparing that to the Heil Pro 7. Which headset will be the better one overall?
Radio Sport. I own both of them. I only use the Radio Sport. The Heil gave me a headache even when I bent the steel to put less pressure on my skull, but I could never get it to kind of be the right tension. The Radio Sport came out of the box wonderful. I really love that headset.
So thanks for the input there. Over to you.
Yeah, and also you get a whole bunch of options for microphone elements. I bought a couple. I ended up using one 99% of the time, so it's probably not terribly cost effective to buy multiple elements for it, but it's a well made piece of equipment. Anyway, this is AC2GS with the Limark Technical Net. It's only 9:01. The night is young. So if anyone has any questions or topics for discussion or comments, please hit that push to talk.
SHO.
Hello, John.
Hey, Roy. We've been doing dinner here, so I'm not sure if I missed anything when you do your news and things like that, but did you get the email I sent you?
Gee, I remember seeing it, and unfortunately, I forgot all about it. I'll go into my mail and read it. I'm sorry.